Welcome to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It's a new year, but we've got an old problem, drought and a limited water supply, while population growth continues at a record rate. We're talking about the future of the Edwards Aquifer Authority and what's in store for pumping limits in 2015. If you've got questions about your well and pumping and drought limits, give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. With us to discuss this, who better to talk about the Edwards Aquifer Authority than Roland Burice, General Manager of the EAA. Roland, welcome back to The Source.
Good to be with you again.
Also with us, Mark Hamilton, the Executive Director for Aquifer Sciences Incorporated. Mark, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So, new year, and we've got a new calendar for the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and it's about big letters, drought. Says it right there. Beautiful pictures of some scary landscapes of a lack of water. Tell me why the calendar? What's going on here?
Well, what we wanted to do is kind of really the calendar is a testament to the hard work and kind of the conservation ethic that the region has adopted over the past many years. We've now gone through drought for the past several years, depending on how you want to measure that, 4, 5, 6 years of drought. And it has been a hardship on many folks, but I think that through it, we find ourselves today still in the middle of a drought.
Because we're still, in San Antonio, we're stage three still.
That's correct.
And Uvalde stage five.
That's correct. We're still under those severe drought restrictions. We've had some rainfall, but we're at such a rainfall deficit cumulative over the past several years that to break that cycle is going to take some significant rainfall and a significant change in weather pattern, I would say, to where you get into a wet season. And there's talk about, you know, the El Nino. There's a 65% chance of seeing that this spring, which may help.
Yeah, you know, you may be reading stories about the drought's over, folks, because of El Nino. Well, the water hasn't gotten here yet.
That's right. That's right.
So those stories, that's great to fill blank spaces in the paper, but that's not real.
You're absolutely right. And we've so going into the end of this last year in 2014, we thought, let's take a look at the impacts of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, the EAA Act, the regulatory programs that were put in place back in 1996. Let's see what impacts they've really had in terms of saving water. And we did that, and we were quite startled in a positive way about the impacts that we've seen, and it's impacts that I think have helped us endure during this current drought. We're starting to compare this drought to the drought of the 50s. You know, you always make that comparison,
right,
to the drought of record.
That was the drought of record.
Correct.
So have we beaten that?
Well, I'll
have you broken the record?
I'll defer to Mark on that.
Okay, Mark Hamilton, you're the scientist here. Tell us.
No, I don't think we've beaten that record yet. We've had more recharge in the last 7 or so years than we did during the 7 years in the 50s. But we have a lot more demand than we did in the 50s, so that's the concern. However, because of the conservation measures related to the Act, we've been able to maintain higher water levels than we should have, you might say. It's been surprising that it hasn't been worse water level-wise.
So because we have restrictions, we have the EAA, which we didn't have back in the 50s, a better awareness. Were we just water crazy back then?
Right. Well, you know, we're much more conservation aware now than we were in the 50s by necessity. But combined with that, of course, we have regulations. We have critical period management rules. So those rules say you can only pump so much during certain times, given what the level at J-17 is or the level at J-27 in Uvalde.
Those are the monitoring air stations.
Correct. And those things combined with the permitting system, you know, that water has more value now, if you will, than it did in the 50s. So all those things combined, and it's not just those things alone, that public awareness, I think, is much higher when it comes to conservation. And, you know, the search for alternative water sources is always out there. The ASR program has helped with some of the maintaining levels, I would think. And then any alternative source you can come up with where you relieve the demand on the aquifer itself.
So, okay, let's go to the callers. Brian has called in. Our number is 210-614-8980. Brian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. I think this is a very important topic. I grew up in San Antonio, Churchill High School, Trinity University. I've been studying water for a long time. And everybody talks about the droughts, but I think on the other hand, you ought to look at the times of high rain. So in 1998, we had 30 inches in San Antonio within 2 days. In 2001, we had 40 inches within 5 days. And there's ways that you can manage your landscape on farms and ranches and conserved land on conservation easements to actually put more water into the groundwater system. And not many people are really looking at that. However, I've been involved with a couple of projects where private landowners are putting private money up to do that to make sure their groundwater levels stay high. And you can do that throughout the recharge zone, which I believe is 1,250 square miles, and the contributing zone, which is 5,400 square miles. And I believe an inch and a quarter of water over that entire area, if you were to be able to recharge an extra inch and a quarter of water in that entire area, that is more than the almost 500,000 acre feet that the EAA is allowed to pump. So I'd love to hear your guests'
comments
on that.
Thanks for those comments. We sure do appreciate it, and call back anytime. So, Roland, what are Brian's points here?
Well, I think Brian's hitting on something that has been a popular idea for some time in one respect, and that's the idea of recharge dams, building recharge dams over the recharge zone, structures that would slow the flow of surface water when it does rain, when you have those significant rains that would hold back that water and let it percolate into the ground. So we do have currently four of these structures that have been in place now for many, many years. The challenge when you get to where we are today, though, is that those structures don't work unless there's rain. And so, you know, you have to take into account those things. There's also,
but as Brian says, when we do get rain, we get a lot all
right,
at once.
Right. And so the biggest challenge for an aquifer like the Edwards and its limestone karst nature is that unlike, for example, the Carrizo-Wilcox aquifer to the south of us, that is more of a sand aquifer that has storage capacity. In other words, that water does not move quite so quickly through. In the Edwards, you can get a big flush of water that comes in, but its residence time in the aquifer is not going to be long, and it's going to be water's always leaving this aquifer either through wells or through the springs naturally. And so that's the challenge, the storage capacity, our ability to store water once it gets into the aquifer. So, for example,
so the aquifer is a sieve.
In many respects, and I'll defer to Mark to talk about the aquifer.
Sure, we'll get into that in just a second. We're going to get ready to go to a break here, but let me just recap here. We're talking about the Edwards Aquifer, a new year. We got a new calendar, and there's a reason why if you get this calendar, you need to mark May 9th on it because there could be a city election on that day. It could be deciding whether or not to re-up on the Edwards Aquifer Protection Program, which has been instrumental. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Also, what are your concerns about your well in your backyard? Have you seen the well going down? What's happening with well levels in the area? Give us a call. This is The Source on KSTX. The number is 210-614-8980. We will be right back. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to be remembering the art, the life, the inspiration of Robert Rehm. But right now, we are talking about Edwards Aquifer Authority, pumping the aquifer in 2015, the ongoing drought, and a municipal election on Saturday, May 9th, in which could be on the ballot the re-upping of the Aquifer Protection Program, an eighth of a cent sales tax that we're paying now. And how has that been working, Roland Ruiz? What's the mechanism? What's going on there?
Well, what you're talking about is a program that is designed to put land over the recharge zone that has an impact to the water quality, mainly in the aquifer, preserving that land in its current state to minimize the negative impacts to that water quality once it gets into the aquifer.
So when we're paying an eighth of a cent sales tax, and that money piles up, and what do they do with it? The city uses it for what?
The city uses it then to go out and identify properties on the recharge zone that they deem to be ideal for preserving for that purpose of benefit to the aquifer. And so the program really is a collaborative approach to managing what happens on the recharge zone between landowners and then, in this case, a government, the city of San Antonio. And to the citizenry of San Antonio, to their credit, over time they have more than once they have approved this sales tax, understanding that the benefits to them is in their water quality, knowing that the Edwards is the primary water source. And so it's been a very productive and successful program. We support it in the sense of providing some technical expertise to the process with our geologists who go out and assess the properties and determine their value in that process. And in fact, Mark's group does much of that work. They're the geologists that we have on staff. So
okay. All right, so we're going to talk more about this in just a moment. I'm going to go back to the phones and get George on the line, and the number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join the conversation. Hey, George, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I was wondering, could you go over the history of what happened in the past? We had like 95% of the money appropriated for lakes around San Antonio, and San Antonio just refused to build the lakes, and now they want to sue and get water out of in other areas and kind of steal water from other places. I was just wondering why San Antonio is so against surface water.
Are you talking about like Applewhite?
Yeah, Applewhite and Cibolo, there was 95% of that money was appropriated, but San Antonio didn't want to pay for the 5% matching funds. You know, that could have been paid for a long time ago. And The military said that if you want to keep your military mission, you're going to have a lot more water in South Texas, and San Antonio just kind of... they went the other way.
All right. Well, I'm not really clear about all the details that you bring up, but George, thanks for that. And so if he's talking about Applewhite, you know, the city did purchase land and condemned land and then appropriated it. And then the voters turned it down. They didn't want to have surface water. And instead we went to other means, water banking, which has worked out pretty well. And that's more of a SAWS deal.
Yeah, that's really more of a city and SAWS, formerly City Water Board at the time, issues that they dealt with back in the 80s and into the early 90s. Of course, much of that predates the existence of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. And what happened when the Edwards Aquifer Authority came into existence that kind of changed the game, if you will. All of a sudden now, there was, rather than having unrestricted use to the aquifer, you had regulated access to the aquifer. There were limits and a cap placed on how much could be withdrawn. And as a result of that, you added to the value of the water, you monetized the water, and over time that has incentivized conservation. And so it's turned out to be a positive for the Edwards. But for the region in general, it's really prompted now the region to have to look elsewhere for alternative water supplies outside the Edwards.
And right. So what we have this Vista Ridge pipeline. Right. So this has been approved by the city and by SAWS. They're going to be building this multi-billion-dollar pipeline, bringing water down from Central Texas down to here. Is this going to take pressure off of the Edwards Aquifer?
In theory, it should, because you have another water source that gives SAWS the ability.
Even though the water that we're getting out of this deal is much more expensive, and you would prefer to use the cheaper water, which is coming out of the Edwards first.
Again, I wouldn't want to speak for SAWS and how they intend to use that water or prioritize that water's use, but generally speaking, anytime you can diversify your water supply, it certainly gives you more options. And SAWS has done that over time. They've done that with the development of their aquifer storage and recovery project in the Carrizo. They're developing other brackish projects, I think in Wilson County, for example. And then they're bringing in this other water, the source from Burleson County. So the water portfolio, if you will, for the city is certainly growing and diversifying. And just like with any portfolio, there's strength and diversity.
Sure. So let me ask you, Mark Hamilton, you're the executive director of Aquifer Sciences Incorporated. Back to the Aquifer Protection Program, this 1/8 cent sales tax that could be reauthorized in May. It's going to go to voters. It likely hasn't been exactly decided by city council, but it seems to be going in that direction. So how important is this program? What is happening with this land?
I think it's a really beneficial program for the aquifer, for the system, because you preserve land in its current state, in an undeveloped state, so your impacts to water quality and to some extent water quantity over the recharge zone are are now mitigated, if you will. You're not, you know, you're taking away that potential to add a pollutant source, if you will.
So without this program, would we probably see more urban sprawl out over the recharge zone?
If not now, at some point. You know, is that 5 years from now or 50 years from now? I certainly couldn't answer
like
that
situations
question.
Like the Bad Cave. You know, they wanted to build a development out there. They said this would be interfere with the natural area, and you need resources in order to combat the developers. They've got a lot of money. We've got to figure out a way to come up with money in order to present an alternative to landowners. I mean, you can't blame a guy for wanting to make $5 million plus for selling off his land.
Right.
You got to give him something to so that we can keep the natural area without him, you know, having to make a really hard choice.
Right. Right. But,
yeah, so how do we know the land is still being used for what it's intended?
Well, one of the things that the folks in my group do is they go out and do an annual easement inspection. They go out and check on the property, and they have a regimented course of action that they follow to ensure that there are no activities taking place that would violate the terms of that easement. And then we just turn that information over, that report over to the city. So that's our in-kind contribution, if you will.
Okay. And so, so Robert Ruiz, are you kind of, I see the calendar, you know, drought, big letters, you're informing your folks. Is that, if you got a well, you get one of these, who gets these calendars?
Really, this goes out to every permit holder that we have, every groundwater withdrawal permit holder. We also make them available while supplies last, really to anyone who comes in and asks for one. But it was intended as an outreach informational piece many years ago when we started this. And every year now we've tried to adopt a different theme. And, of course, we're in the middle of a drought. But I'll quantify what you said about drought in both letters. But there's a qualifier that says in smaller letters, defending against the drought. And so the theme of the calendar this year is really highlighting folks across the region who are doing just that. They're defending against the drought through innovative landscape practices, through using technologies that are now available, you know, farmers who are using high efficiency irrigation methods, that it has really drastically reduced the amount of water that they need for their farming operations. And so there's any of a number of people from across the region that are really taking the conservation ethic to heart. And it's showing up in how they run their business and how they run their households. And every little bit is helping. And I think it's a testament to the folks from this part of the state that I would say that we're leading in this regard, the state, and maybe if I could be so bold as to say perhaps in the nation.
Right. We have to be aware that you can get exhaustion. People can just get complacent that, okay, the drought's there. We've been dealing with it for a number of years, and the world hasn't come to an end yet.
Right.
But we have to still, I don't know, keep people somehow juiced about the drought, right?
Well, and to your point that the world has not come to an end because of the drought. And our contention, based on our analysis of what's happened over the past years, is that the reason it hasn't come to an end is because of the programs that we put in place to help people do just that, to prepare for a drought and then endure a drought. And so it's a return on their investment, really, that things today could be a lot worse. And we think, based on what we've looked at, for example, Comal Springs very likely would have gone dry last summer had we not been doing our work for the past 16 years or so. And so that's why I say it's really a testament to the folks who have made the hard sacrifices over time and have, as tired as the drought message can get because we've been in it for so long, we can't stop communicating that message.
Right. You've got to figure out new ways to keep it fresh. Let's get Michael on the line. He's called in. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I live over here in Comal County, and we have six flood control structures that are over the recharge zone, and one of them doesn't even have a gate system on it. The other five do, but the gates remain open at all times. I was wondering if it could work possibly setting up a system where it could hold that water back during heavy rainfall to allow it to go into the aquifer instead of just continue on down to an already flooded situation.
Is that something y'all can comment on? Yeah,
well, you know, those
thanks for the call, Michael.
Those structures are not under our jurisdiction or our purview, but generally speaking, our approach to this has been that we're right now we're undertaking a significant study we call it our interformational flow study. And what we're doing, and Mark can speak to this, we're studying the relation between the Trinity Aquifer and the Edwards, and that much of that occurs in the recharge zone. And we're trying to gain some knowledge about how the two aquifers interface so that perhaps down the road we can make some better decisions about how to manage and operate structures, flood control slash recharge. And I don't know, Mark, if you want to.
Yeah, it's been an age-old question, if you will, to understand is there and how much is there water coming out of the Trinity and moving into the Edwards as interformational recharge or interformational flow. So we're in the very early stages of a five-year study to really look at that.
It's still a mystery what's going on under the ground. But so I'm going to get back to this Edwards Aquifer Protection Program and the vote that will be coming up in May. Because we're talking, some people may think, well, it's working so well, why would we get rid of it? But we're talking about an eighth of a cent sales tax. We've got all sorts of people who might be eyeballing that money and thinking it could be spent better elsewhere, maybe on streetcars or for police protection or streets and potholes. You never know. So, and you're not allowed, Roland, to campaign on these types of things.
That's correct. We are quote, a government. And as a government, as the Edwards Aquifer Authority, we are not in the business, or nor can we be, of advocating on referendums for public vote and such. But just in concept, generally in concept, the idea of putting lands into conservation easements for the benefit of the aquifer, we have found them to be successful and productive for their intended purpose. So it's a way of getting at protecting the aquifer that is not regulatory in nature. In other words, you have willing partners mm-hmm. who come together and decide, hey, this is a good idea, we're willing to do this, and then there's an exchange of money for it.
All right, Roland Ruiz, he is the general manager of the Edwards Aquifer Authority, also joined by Mark Hamilton, executive director for Aquifer Sciences Incorporated. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back from the NPR News Break, we're going to be talking about the life and inspiration of Robert Rehm. Stay with us.